It's time once again for our winter giveaway. This giveaway is very simple to enter. Be a patron. So the easiest way to enter is go to patreon.com/comicsfundprofit. Become a patron at any level at our Patreon site, and you can do it that way. You can also enter by going to Threadless and buying some merch and tagging us in a photo of you in said merch. So if you like one of our t-shirts or hats or whatever, and you go to comicsfunprofit.threadless.com and find all our merch and like some of it, buy it, wear it. You can either tag us in social with you wearing it, or send us a photo of you wearing it, and you're entered. So those are the two ways. Be a patron and buy merch. And then you get entered in our winter giveaway, which is fun swag giveaways of photos and stickers and signed comics, just like our fall giveaway was. And we had 5 lucky winners win stuff in our fall giveaway. So we're hoping to have as many entrants this time that we can give away that many again. So be a patron, buy merch, enter the winter giveaway. Check out beacons.ai/comicsfundprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need, all in one place. You can provide feedback, listen, support, share, enjoy these. We have our Patreon there. You can buy us a beer or a coffee. You can check out our Instagrams, our Twitters, our Facebooks. Check out our YouTube page. You can email us. You can listen to our podcasts on Patreon, if you're a subscriber, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, on Podbean. We have Google Podcasts on there. We have an Amazon wish list. You want to buy Kyle and I something? Fine. You can do that here. We appreciate it. We have Kyle's RPG podcast listed on there, so you can check out his Dork Day Afternoon offerings. We have Cowabunga links, so you can check out the Cowabunga deep discount FOC and pre-order list. Get on that. That's RLCS, so you can check that out as well. And we want to just give you opportunities to say hi, to check out what we're doing, support us if you would like, or just listen. Check out beacons.ai/comicsfundprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need. Thanks. Back to the show.
Aloha, it's Jason from Hawaii. Welcome to a special edition of the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. In this episode, I will be interviewing comic book creators Matt Boers and Ben Clarkson. They are here to promote the trade paperback Justice Warriors from Ahoy Comics. Now, this was a 6-part miniseries that came out in 2022 and has been collected into a trade and is now on the 3rd printing. Matt and Ben, welcome to the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent. Thanks for having us.
We're doing great. Aloha.
Yeah. No. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Thank you very much. Listeners, I'm just going to go over some of Matt and Ben's past works. And Matt and Ben, please feel free to either correct me or add anything you want listeners to, you know, check out. Now, Matt is an Eisner-winning comics editor. He is a 2-time Pulitzer Prize finalist in cartooning. And in 2013, he founded The Nib. It is a political satire journalism and nonfiction on what's going down in the world. Matt, I checked out the website. I've seen some of the comic strips. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Now Ben is a cartoonist, artist, and animator. He has been nominated for a Juno for his illustration on record covers. He has designed posters for some of the largest tour bands in North America. Some of his illustrations have appeared in some of the best magazines and newspapers around the world. Some of his art has been shown in Mexico, The Hague, and New York. Matt and Ben, is there anything else you guys want to add, or is there anything you guys want to correct?
I think you got the gist of it.
No, you've shared our bona fides.
Okay. All right. Now, before I get into the interview, I just want to give a big shout out to Hannah Bahedria, Superfan Promotion, for setting up this interview. Hannah, thank you very much, and thank you for providing me an advanced reading copy. And Hannah, again, thank you very much for all your hard work behind the scenes. Matt and Ben, do you guys want to add anything to that?
Big shout out to Hannah.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I also got some of my information from the WM Q&A podcast episode 216, Justice Will Prevacate, with Matt Boards and Ben Clarkson. Now, that was dated on June 27th of 2022. That was a very good episode. That was a very good interview. So, listen, if you guys get a chance to check out that interview. Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
Oh, I just said that was a fun one. Yeah.
We were reminiscing on it.
All right. Ben and Matt, where can listeners follow you on social media?
Oh, I'm pretty easy. I'm just my name, Matt Boers, on most social media.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find me on X, the Everything app, x.com, the Everything app, at Ben Clarkson.
Okay. Now, before we start talking about Justice Warriors, Matt and Ben, before, how did you guys meet?
It was the summer of 2020, and things were wild all over the world.
Yes.
And I started just harassing Matt on formerly called Twitter, and just sending him crazy DMs with drawings of fish I had made. And eventually he started to respond.
Yeah, Ben had a pitch really for Justice Warriors ready to go. I mean, he invented the world and the main characters and everything, and wanted my help in getting it made. And I loved the world instantly. We vibed on a lot of our politics and our influences and everything like that. And once we got together, we started coming up with all those ideas for this world, and it just, it led to this this book.
All right. Now we're just going to, that's a perfect segue. We're going to jump right in. Now, Screen Rant has, there's a quote on the trade paperback, quote, "It's Justice Warriors filled with action, humor, and a biting commentary." Matt, I'm going to start off with you first. Ben, jump right in. For listeners, what is Justice Warriors about?
Ben.
Justice Warriors is about a city. It is about a beautiful, shining city in the future, encased inside a crystal dome called Bubble City. And this city is perfect. There's no crime. Mm-hmm. There's no discrimination. There's no social problems inside this bubble. The only problem is the vast mega slum filled with toxic waste and pollution. Mm-hmm. And this slum spreads to the horizon. And that slum is called the Uninhabited Zone. Mm-hmm. And the Uninhabited Zone is densely populated by a mutant population. And they have to be kept in check mm-hmm. by the Bubble City Police Department. And so the story follows two members of the Bubble City Police.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to face off against their greatest threat yet.
Let's see. I'm going to add. Is there anything else you guys want to add to that? Or?
Well, Ben covered it, but we can. It's about a lot of things. We can talk about it. It's about a lot of things, really. It's about mm-hmm. economics, social yes. media, police,
yes,
everything.
Yeah, it's a satire. Mm-hmm. So we play stuff big,
mm-hmm.
and you start recognizing parts of our world and how insane the actual mm-hmm. world we live in is. By yes. how crazy we make this Bubble City situation.
And it's, I have to say, it's pretty funny. Actually, I love the uninhabited zone. I love it. It's just great.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to live there? You know, it's just a densely packed, never-ending slum filled with mutants. And to be honest, I mean, of course, the living conditions are awful, and that's the point of the story. But I mean, that's where the culture and excitement are in this world. You don't want to live in Bubble City with all of these one percenters.
I'm gonna ask, like, Matt, I'm gonna start off with you. Who are your, because we already talked about the, we already mentioned two main characters, but like, who are your main characters? I know you have Swamp Cop, and I'm gonna say, and I'm gonna say, I know this is gonna sound very weird, but I'm gonna, hopefully I'm pronouncing the name correctly because the spelling is different. Officer Shit.
Yeah,
Shit.
Officer
Officer
Shit.
Shit.
Now it's spelled Schitt because it's from the German, and he took his wife's last name, and she's not a shit mutant. But yes, it's a very weird look. It's a very weird book that has shit mutants and swamp mutants, and you know has great action and lowbrow humor, and then also has hopefully smart things going on with the politics in it. It's a wild world. You know, I think we had to contend with all the other types of dystopian cities that have been done in comics. You know, you got Transmetropolitan and Alan Moore's Top Ten and Mega City One, and we wanted Bubble City and the Uninhabited Zone to be even crazier than all these. No question about it. We wanted to be leading the pack.
I've read the well, I read the trade. And I love it because it's like when you first, for me, when I first start reading the first couple of pages, it looks like it's one of these serious comic. It looks like it's one of those serious things where I believe the one of the Swamp Cop's partner, Roger, right? Is that
Yeah, Rogers.
Roger, he's a serious, almost like the Punisher type, like, you know, Nick Fury, and we have to take down the Starfish gang, and you know, and then he's like, Swamp Cop, where are you? Oh, you know, they're going down. And he's like, the Swamp Cop's like by the food vending truck. Oh, I thought they said 10 o'clock. It's only 9:47. I'm trying to get some breakfast. You know, do we have to go now? You know, and the taco truck guy goes, hey, you know, I'll call you when your taco's ready, you know. But they
Yes.
Yeah. We play it straight at the beginning. And we play it we it's the thing the Justice Warriors jumps from playing it straight to being very zany very quickly. And by going back and forth, I think we have like a sort of a winning it's a winning vibe to jump back and forth between these two modes.
Yeah, so this won't spoil too much for readers because it's in the opening 8 pages. Rogers is Swamp's partner, and then he is killed during this bust on starfish mutants that are getting a baby formula. He's run over horrifically by a self-driving bus. And, you know, one of the, like you mentioned, what kind of character Rogers is. I mean, he is kind of like Nick Fury, Judge Dredd, Snake Plissken. You know, he's this archetypal tough guy, and we off him in the beginning because
Yeah,
it's
we
like
just rip him to shreds.
we're going in a different direction. And then the setup is that, you know, Swamp, who is depicted as fairly incompetent in the beginning, he is now the veteran who is taking on a new partner in the form of Shit, who's basically an idiot.
Oh my God. I mean, I just I'm sorry, I'm just like, because
He's speechless because Justice Warriors will do that to readers, you know? It floors them like the self-driving bus.
But like I said, I love those first few pages because it already sets up the tone of the series. It's really great. Ben, I'm gonna ask you this because you mentioned it during the WM Q&A podcast. How did you come up with the name Bubble City? Because I remember you mentioned that you laughed at yourself 2 in the morning while you're in bed trying to work while you were working on the story. But how did you come up? And what were the other names for the city that you're thinking of?
It was Dome City for
Okay.
so long. And I just called it Dome City because I've been
Yeah.
working on this, like the IP, I guess, the idea of Justice Warriors for like 10 years. And
Okay.
so things have just like sort of winked into existence over time. And then I'm like, okay, I'm keeping that. I'm keeping that. And so it was Dome City for 6 years until one day I'm in bed and I'm like, what about Bubble City? And then all of the jokes of like economic bubbles.
Yes.
All of that came off of that change, and it was instantly super funny. And so I just started laughing to myself, like a crazy person. And yeah, it stuck, and Matt really vibed with it.
Matt, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, no, not exactly. I mean, I mean, I loved it. I love the world. It's in line with a lot of my influences and stuff that I do and want to do in comics. I mean, like, I'm drawn to sort of dystopian sci-fi, mutants, cyborgs. I was doing that a lot in my editorial cartoons the last few years. And I'd been really wanting to do longer form comics and fiction, which had been an interest and goal of mine, since childhood. But then I kind of found a niche in political cartooning and did that for 18 years. So Justice Warriors was a real fulfillment of like, oh, this is the type of comic that I really want to make already. So that's why me
Yes.
and Ben got along.
Oh, that's great. I'm gonna jump to I may jump around back a little bit, but
Around.
let me so Ben, because like you said, you've been working on this story for 10 years. What were some of the influences of the story? Because already Matt, I know you talk about dystopian futures, Ben, I know you mentioned about I think Matt, you mentioned about how Roger, is like kind of like a Snake Plissken. It's like, oh my God, that's right. He's like Snake with the eye patch and everything. Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, it's the story came after the world. So I had this idea for a world, and then Matt and I agreed, oh, let's work on this thing. And we sort of sat down and be like, how do you even introduce the real part of writing is figuring out how do you introduce this crazy idea for a world to the reader in a way that makes sense. And that's when he and I actually started working. And we had to, over the summer of 2020, we were looking at the world and like, what are we responding to? And this story of this insane social media gang, the Libra gang, taking over huge parts of the US and threatening the bubble starts to emerge. And so they're stealing cybernetics from all over the city. What are they doing? What is this mystery? What are they building? And then with a final showdown at the end of the book where everything is revealed.
And I would say the main vehicle then for doing that story, if it isn't already obvious though, is the buddy cop drama, right? There's a lot of different influences in Justice Warriors aesthetically and politically and all this other stuff. But we're playing with a lot of different tropes, but I think the main one is the central story is a buddy cop story. It's
Yeah, it's
bad.
like a
It's
sci-fi action movie.
yeah, it's like bad boys, took acid and watched Akira.
Swamp Cop, Officer Ship. How did you guys come up with these character designs?
That's all Ben. But before Ben talks, I'm gonna say though, he came up with most of them before we worked together, but then we came up with this character Ratzinger, who's in,
yes,
who's kind of like a sort of like a deep state figure, and he kind of comes out and advises the prince mayor, and he's a big rat,
yes,
humanoid rat, cybernetic leg, a little, you can see his exposed brain on top. And Ben came up with that design, and it's amazing. I love all of Ben's designs, but I think maybe it's just because I had a role in creating the character, not the visual design though. Mm-hmm. But I think I love Ratzinger the most visually.
Actually, before we can start talking about the characters, let's talk about Ratzinger, because he plays a very interesting role. And also too, you guys did a little bit of research, right? Because what he presented to the mayor about, the mayor had this record album. The mayor's going, my record's not selling. What do we do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, then there's an economic scheme to try to juice the record sales. And Matt and I are both very politically involved men, or politically interested men. And so the book is a satire. So the book takes real world stuff that happens, real yes. occurrences, like how police actually operate, how their relationship to violence, how does the economy work? So we wanted to make fun of how the economy actually works. And so there is a big scheme in the book, which when presented to the reader sounds insane. Sounds like a crazy thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's actually us just describing like the actual United States central bank policy of like an overnight exchange window. You can borrow money from the government at negative rates overnight if you're rich enough. Mm-hmm. That's how the thing works. And so we make fun of that mechanism in the book. And it seems crazy. People are crazy.
You know, I when we were writing this, one of the I guess the plot engine in the first half of the book is there's an economic boom and bust in sort of every issue, and it creates a new problem. Then they have the prince kind of comes up with a wacky solution, and then the problem sort of creates a new kind of crime. So in issue two, there's the bread bubble, and people are investing in bread not as a food anymore, but as a, you know, a commodity that's almost like a I don't want to say NFTs because they're actually real, but it's similar to NFTs. Also, well, you know, I was reading about the tulip mania. You may have you may know about this old school the tulip mania. There was a tulip mania in I'm gonna forget the year. Maybe I could look it up. But you know,
it's tulips, like late Dutch Renaissance.
Yeah, early to mid 1600s. The Dutch tulip bulb market. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the tulip bulb market, but at one point in time, it was popping. And it basically became the value of a tulip, which were heavily desired, became different than like, it became a commodity of like, oh, like a collectible. Like, oh, I have a tulip.
Yeah.
And people like tulips, but people like them so much that I can buy tulips today because they're $4 and sell them next week for $6 when prices spike. And it created this insane tulip mania where people were investing in it.
People were buying tulips that hadn't bloomed yet. Yeah. They were buying like futures of tulips.
Yeah.
And so it's this kind of microcosm of like economic insanity and is sort of a famous like mini bubble. So we were, you know, incorporating all those kind of things into converging them with, you know, stimulus and NFTs and all this other stuff.
Oh, okay. And then, Ben, I wanted to mention, because when you're talking about, you know, the financing part of the United States and stuff, because you mentioned that you guys read up a little bit on something called quantitative easing that you guys kind of used in the book, because this is a real thing.
Yeah, they print Google money it. And they give it to the rich. That's how the system works. They print money, they give it to the rich. The rich buy everything. And then regular people don't have anything.
Yes. And then the regular people are like going, oh my God, if prices are going up, I want on this.
They'll just price fix the entire economy overnight. Yeah. Like how many, like, isn't there like an egg cooperative or something? Or like the egg industry, the dairy industry is like big lawsuit right now. Because it has been proven that they conspired to raise prices for no reason. giant price fixing stuff.
No, that's but that's
and pretty, like and mm-hmm. that's what we satirize in the book. This stuff happens. This is yes. the world you live in. You live in Bubble City, and that's mm-hmm. the joke of the book.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's just like it. That's crazy. But like you, but this is real. Yeah. I wanted to ask about because Matt, you mentioned about in issue two, you know, you guys talk about, you know, how all of a sudden bread becomes like the hot commodity and how people are like buying it without, you know, it's like, no, don't eat it. You know, we need this slice of bread. I'm just asking, was there a deeper meaning for you guys to use the term bread in that issue? And the only reason I'm asking is because I remember it was like a slang for money back in the 70s. And
oh,
if you
sure.
watch, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in 83, but I would still, under certain circumstances, use bread to describe
Yeah,
to
let me hold
money.
Some bread.
you know, I don't recall exactly how it came about, but I think there was a connection. And also, I think the fact that, you know, bread goes stale fairly quickly. So,
yeah.
like, it was an absurd thing that was even, it was even better than tulips to me because, like, with yeah. tulips, people liked them. Aesthetically, but like bread, you just buy to eat. It doesn't really have a purpose beyond that. You know, if it gets stale, you can make some croutons.
Yeah,
that's about the extent of bread's usefulness. So we wanted to take something that only has a singular value, which is mm-hmm. as a food product, mm-hmm. and instead turn it into an investment vehicle. That of course makes no sense because. The hype about it, right? About, oh, we have a guy, the Bread King. He's kind of like an
yes.
investment influencer. And he's talking about, you know, brioche and rolls and all these different kinds of bread. And they're going up at different values. You know, mm-hmm. if you get a roll of brioche, you know, hold, don't sell and don't, certainly don't eat. But then, of course, that's unsustainable because people, need bread to eat and need mm-hmm, money yes. to buy food, so it didn't work out.
But I have to say that was pretty good that you how you guys use that in that issue. That was pretty cool how you use bread. It's like no, don't you? But like you said, it's a short shelf life and it's only for one purpose to eat. You know.
Yeah. Thanks. I'll say we had actually very considerable. Debate about whether or not to do the bread investment thing in issue two, because mm-hmm. we start out with the prince's own record scheme in issue one.
Yeah.
And after introducing the whole world and all these characters for the first time, and the concern was like, you know, is this too crazy? Are we doing too much too fast? We should just maybe stick with a new thing to revive the record scheme thing, keep that going as the main engine. But mm-hmm. I think it succeeded in showing, we wanted to show how crazy this world is that, you know, every week, every day, there's yes. a new craze happening. It's like, which is similar to our world, you know,
yes.
I think it is. So it's our world, but you know, cranked up.
Ben, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, like Matt and I are doing a bit of writing right now, and what I would say is it's the wrong decision from a story's perspective, but I think it's right for comics. Mm-hmm. Like from book to book, from chapter to chapter in the trade, it's very funny.
Yeah.
Lots of different things happening. Lots of each issue is sort of a set piece in itself, so it made sense.
And Matt, going back to like how you say, each issue you guys come up with different set pieces and it's just a reflection of what's going on in the world and what it is that I know Ben, I know you mentioned that you want to make this comic like an evergreen comic, not to be feel dated, because if someone reads this 10 years from now, they're going to go, oh my God, this is a reflection on our times
mm-hmm.
at that point. Because the thing I have to mention is that I love was it chapter two or chapter, I may have gotten the chapters mixed up. It was either issue two or issue three called Awareness Month, where I love where yeah. I think the cop, you know, where the cops come out, it's like, you know, here, we're here to disperse the crowd or something. Oh, and yes, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I mean,
Police departments do this. They're like Matt found promotional material of them holding up like pink handcuffs. If you think about what a handcuff is, you're being detained, you're being kidnapped. You don't necessarily want breast cancer awareness to be associated with your kidnapping.
Well, they have,
so we just brought it like one step further. We just turned it up one notch.
And we have we go back to those kind of jokes. Like later, we have a mental health awareness gun. And these are not.
I know.
You know, I mean, and it's funny and it's meant to be funny, but it is. It's not too. There's. You can go buy. It's not just cops. You can go buy a pink Glock for breast, and then the proceeds go to breast cancer awareness, because breast cancer is, you know, a very widely experienced cancer. A lot of people have it. So there's a lot of personal experience with it. And then as a result, there's sort of a industry around the awareness of it, where at some point you've raised awareness. We're all aware, right? You know, and then at some point, the biggest one is like the, Susan G. Komen Foundation. I think I'm saying that right. You know, they've come under criticism for kind of like, okay, well, you raise millions and millions of dollars, and then it's sort of a machine to raise more millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And
yes.
you have races, and you have pink Glocks. Maybe they don't have pink Glocks.
No,
but, you know.
But...
And then at some point, it's kind of it becomes self-parody, right? You know, it's like, well, go get screened and all that. But I don't think we need to be arrested with pink handcuffs.
Yeah. Wow, that's the pink handcuffs are sold in those lingerie.
Great Christmas
adult,
gift.
You know, then that's something different. But and that's what I love about this. The little touches of that. It's because Ben, like you said, that you know it's that you know police departments even. Other companies and stuff, they're doing these little things. It's like, yeah, you know, yes, we have to, you know, we want to show our support for this, but if you're, I don't know, like, for example, you know, it, but if you're, but it, but how much of it does it make sense? Is it, you know, because, it, you know,
very little.
Yeah.
Very little.
Know, I mean, yeah,
makes
you know.
Very little sense.
At least that's the thesis of Justice Warriors, is that whether we're talking about awareness raising, cops, economic schemes, social media, very little of it makes sense.
Matt, I'm going to start off with you because you already mentioned it that in issue one, there was a baby formula shortage. Now, when this issue was released, there was an actual baby formula shortage.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you first, and then Matt, please chime in. What were your guys' reaction when the comic reflected on real world events?
Well, you know, it was interesting that that happened. I mean, we certainly weren't expecting a real life baby formula shortage, but I mean, it really, the comic is not proposing that there's a shortage necessarily. It's just that the gang is stealing it. And if you've ever had to buy baby formula, which Ben and I were using baby formula for our infants that we both had around the same time, so in 2020. And once you're in the world of baby formula, you're like, holy shit, this stuff is insanely expensive. Mm-hmm. It's locked behind a glass at the supermarket because they don't want like poor mothers to feed their babies without, you know, forking over $65. And you realize, wow, this is crazy. So you know, it was written into the comic because we were both actually dealing with baby formula at the time, and it was you know, it's kind of crazy making. And you know, the politics of Justice Warriors is such that we wanted there to be a kind of you know, a twist on why this, like, the classic like cyberpunk gang is like doing what they're doing, right? What are they trying to get? They're trying to hack the system and get a special key or something. It's like, no, they're trying to get baby formula for children.
Yeah, I feel like we're just trying to be a bit more honest about where crime comes from a little bit and make a joke at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, if Justice Warriors has any predictive power and things that we cartoon about come true, then there's going to be a lot of problems. Because we do plan on doing more of this. And I got to say, if any of these stories come true, it's going to be bad news for us.
Let me get back to the character designs, because I still want to talk about Swamp Cop and Officer Shit. Like, how did you guys come up with that design? Because they're just funny designs, and I love it.
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea where they came from. Swamp Cop just got drawn one day.
Yeah.
And then 5 years later, I was like, his partner should be poop. And that was literally the extent of my like thinking about what the character designs were. They just seemed right. I just drew them one day. And, you know, a poop being cop being poop. Poop being cop is very funny. And it's a big choice for a character design. Like, it's not a human guy with blonde hair.
Yes.
It's a big swing. And I think that's part of the appeal of Justice Warriors, is that aesthetically, like visually, it's insane. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Anything can be a character. Yes. Just these massive crowd scenes of just strange mutants. Someone's a toilet. There's cartoon characters from the 90s hidden throughout. Yes. Like, it really is a celebration of character design too. And how crazy a character can be while still understanding them and their world.
Mm-hmm.
It making him poop was a way of telling you what this thing was, which is kooky. It's insane and a bit honest.
Yeah. Matt and Ben, I want to just off the cuff comment. The thing I love about Swamp Cop and Officer Shit is, even though they look really weird, you know, they're relatable, they're lovable characters that you like. Yeah, I see Ben's going, oh, okay. No, I'm being serious, because they seem to work perfectly together, you know.
That's great to hear. I mean, that's what we're going for, you know. Yeah. We are doing a book that's like, you know, they're police, and we show them like not being good police, planting weapons, doing what we euphemistically call police involved shootings, meaning police shoot you and kill
taking
you.
Taking drugs on work hours.
But, you know, it's not about, oh, these are great characters that we hold up as heroes or people you should emulate, but also it would be boring and I don't think very interesting if we just said, well, these are villains and they're bad and they're one dimensional because cops are bad. You know, we have to make an engaging story around them. So, like, you know, Shit is, you know, funny and I think likable in a lot of ways. And Swamp is a very damaged person, but many of us are as well. So maybe there's relatable things inside the characters.
I want to talk about, I realize one of the things I love about Officer Shit and what you guys didn't do too much was do a lot of puns, you know, like, oh my God, Shit's going to hit the fan. You know, I mean,
that's absolutely not allowed. We cannot ever. That is very disrespectful to him to make comments like that.
Yeah.
He would be offended, I think, if people spoke like that around him.
I think if somebody said, I think if Swamp said Shit's going to hit the fan out in the field, that Shit would report him to Bubble City HR.
Yeah.
as, you know, some kind of microaggression. Although I think it would kind of actually, because Shit is, as we we show in the book, you know, very pliable as a being, let's say, you
just
know,
visual shit jokes. Yeah.
So yes. We could do, you know, that, I mean, it's what you just said is tempting, right? Yeah. To have shit hit the fan. Yeah. But I would almost think it would be better if shit hit the fan, but then no one said shit hit the fan.
Yeah absolutely.
Ben, like you said, I love it's more the visual jokes because we all had our sayings like, oh, shit's gonna hit the fan, oh shit, or you know, or it's too easy. We all know it. And if we read it, we're gonna go, oh yeah, I saw that coming, you know. But
and that's what I like about shit as a character. Why because you see him and you think that's what we're gonna do.
Yes.
You think, oh, it's just gonna be poop jokes and shit jokes. But then he is the joke.
Yes.
He is the poop joke. Mm-hmm. And so you don't need to do another one.
Yeah.
Like you got one going every single panel.
But also, I'm going to say, I'm probably reaching on this. I think what I also like about Officer Shit is for us as the reader, this is what we're expecting of Shit, but it's not. It's almost like judging him kind of like maybe judging him for, okay, this is what's going to happen, but no, it's not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope I don't know if that makes sense, but it's almost like it's almost like being judgmental. Okay, this is what's going to happen. Oh no, that's not what's happening. Yes, because then the jokes are a little different, it's funnier. So yeah,
Matt made it really funny. It's a very funny book.
All right, I'm just gonna continue on. I know what I wanted to ask was the Starfish Gang.
Yeah,
I love the Starfish Gang because I think they appeared issue one, I think page two. So did you guys pull references from The Dark Knight Returns, Starro, the conquering starfish, one of the women, the woman that's part of the Starfish Gang, she kind of looked like the private investigator from Dakota North. Was that all intentional?
Matt, did you know about Starro before you did the Starfish?
I know about Starro, but it wasn't really intended to be a riff on that. I mean, okay. I guess there's major similarities because Starro is like a kind of parasitic thing that locks onto your face. I mean, to take one of your questions, the Dark Knight Returns villain, I mean, that is, you know, Ben drew that in. There's just a lot of references like that throughout the book to different kind of comics. The idea is, so we allude to something called Starfish City and the Starfish Gang, and that's a little bit of world building that, you know, maybe we'll get to in future volumes, which is
nice.
It suggests the possibility of other cities in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And then the starfish they're really just starfish, whether their whole deal has not been established, but they can walk. One of them walks away and so they just sort of latch on to people or mutants, and then they can act through them. I guess that is a Starro thing, but it wasn't really, it really wasn't done with any kind of intent around that.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, that was just a subconscious reference, I guess. And then there's a lot of references throughout the book. People who 90s cartoon characters. Any 90s cartoon character will appear at some point.
You know, well, thinking about it, I can give you a better answer. You know, I don't know that it came from Starro, but what it came from was I wanted the mutants to actually be blameless for the crimes they committed, right? So then, you know, he rips off the starfish from one of the guys and he's like reading him his rights, and the guy doesn't even have any idea where he is or what he did.
Yes.
And you know, it's again the Justice Warriors thing is to, like, you know, crank up the differences in our society and everything. So it's like, you know, people want justice and they want people to be held accountable. And sometimes there isn't anyone to hold accountable, or, you know, throwing someone in prison for for a long time for a crime they committed, even if they did it consciously, is not going to improve anyone's lives or rectify anything. So it's like, you know, things are under things like that. What I just said are sort of underneath the surface of what's fun, action and jokes. And, you know, so we don't have to say all that stuff because it's then, you know, you could just go read an essay on incarceration or something, right? And get that information. But we're trying to do it in like a fun comic.
And those are flying off the shelves, those essays. Flying off the shelves. Exactly.
I'm going to slowly start wrapping things up. I just want to ask, how did you guys come up with the title Justice Warriors?
It was a different title for a long time. And that's not an interesting part of the story. Not Justice Warriors is, there's that famous phrase, social justice warriors.
Yes.
So what happens if you add a bit of anti-socialness to social justice warriors? You get justice warriors.
Yeah.
So it's it's a play on the ideas of justice, our hysterical internet time of the social justice warrior. While, you know, justice warriors, is that a good descriptor of cops? Sure.
You know, it works. It's, I mean, proponents and defenders of cops see themselves as, you know, justice warriors. They are the ones who are licensed to use violence in our society and can arrest us. And it's, yeah, it's obviously an ironic title. And it has some other applications, like, you know, the movement, the Libra gang that Ben described, that rises up against the bubble and the police in it, view themselves as justice warriors.
Yes.
They're an armed group whose politics are a little muffled. Well, they're muddled rather, but they're zodiac based. They're a zodiac based. They're basically
system.
Like if Libras became an armed Maoist group, and instead of wanting to impose communism, they wanted to impose Libras being in charge of everything, and vibes based but violent. So that's where that to me is how the title plays into the whole thing.
Okay, Ben, I'm going to start off with you. And then Matt, please comment. How did you guys team up with Ahoy Comics?
Matt had a good connection.
Introduced to Tom Pyre, and you know, they really liked Justice Warriors, and we were shopping it around to like a lot of the indie, you know, creator owned friendly publishers at the time, and we got a couple offers, and Ahoy's was the best offer, but I think maybe, but also the best fit. They just they seemed to want to allow us to do what we wanted to do. You know, we have back matter in every issue. There was some concerns at other places about, you know, the length of the series or maybe the craziness of it. And Ahoy was really on board with that, and they've been a great partner, you know, particularly Tom Pyre and everybody there, Hart, the publisher. And
Tom and Hart have treated us amazingly well, and we're so happy to be with them.
That's nice. Ben, I'm going to start off with you, and then Matt, join in, please. Give shout outs to the other members of the creative team.
Shout them out.
Shout out for my dog, Felipe. You do the best work. Hardcore.
Yeah, he's our colorist. He's great.
Yes.
I mean, we're a small team. It's me and Ben, and then Felipe does the colors. You know, I mean, there's a whole broader Ahoy team of people. I mean, you know, there's Stuart Moore, and there's Hannah, like you mentioned, you know, who does PR with David, and a bunch of people. You know, they're a great company.
Beautiful little family.
Yes. But I'm glad you guys gave Felipe a shout out, your colorist, because the colors are amazing on this. It's really good, especially in the final battle at the end. I'm not going to spoil the end, but the final showdown is, I love it because it reminds me of Lawnmower Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, that was intentional.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I'm glad you picked up on that.
Yeah, oh, it was great. It was like, oh my God, this is so cool. Matt, I'm going to go back off the cuff because I know you said that there you have back matter that was in every issue. It's also in the trade as well, but you also had like one page comic stories that was related to the war to the basically kind of like related into the world of the Justice Warriors. That was nice.
Yeah, thanks. It's really fun to do that stuff. I mean, some of them sort of pertain to the story and some of them don't. They're just like little strips about random stuff in the in Justice Warriors. You know, it's just a format I've worked in a lot doing political cartoons. I love strips and I just wanted to contribute, you know, ex something extra. There's so much we can do with Justice Warriors. You know, we feel like we could tell stories in this universe for forever. So that's part of like the strips are just sort of getting at that idea of like we want to just create as many stories and strips in this world as possible.
And then Ben, I'm going to ask, were you the one or is it Matt or Matt, was it you that also you guys did the like the crime files of whoever was like arrest the moose that was arrested in the first
Yeah.
issue with the starfish and
Yes,
Yeah,
well, I'll correct.
Matt did
That's
all
an
that.
elk. That's an elk,
Oh, an
sir.
elk.
That
I'm
was
sorry. I
Mike.
live in Hawaii. We won't.
That was Mike Elk, actually. Yeah, I mean, again, it's just I love back matter. It added a little fun thing to the story. And you know, we got two. I'm a cartoonist too, and you know,
Yes.
Ben is the artist on the book, the main artist, and I just sort of wanted to contribute as much as possible to you know, some back matter and some other stuff just to give readers a bang for their buck. This is a value proposition.
The book is a really good value, to be honest, and that's something we're really proud of, is there's a lot of additional stuff in it. Matt has an entire story in the back that he drew. Blue Lives Matter.
Yes.
That's it. Great book. Great story he's added. Yeah, and it's a high quality paper product as well. Feels good in your hand.
Now, Ben, I'm going to start off with this question, and Matt, jump in. So, because Ben, we talked about this a little bit before we started the interview, because you told me an interesting story. Now, as I mentioned that, the series, the monthly series came out in 2022. In February of 2023 was the first printing of Justice Warriors in trade paperback. What is do you I'm going to ask you you want to talk about how it be the just how Justice Warriors became popular?
I don't know how it became popular. I'm
Okay.
thrilled that it is popular.
Okay.
It's a little nuts, the response that we've had to it. People have really globbed onto it. Because when it came out in floppies, just app went nowhere. Nobody cared. Nobody knew what the hell this thing was. Didn't do super well. We're a new series. We're starting out. It's a small publisher, but
Reviewed quite well, I want
reviewed
to say.
very well. Yes.
But yeah,
Reviewers
wasn't
loved
breaking any sales numbers.
it. But since we got collected and went out in trade paperback, Matt and I have very passionately tried to just keep telling people about it, which is the only thing an artist can ever really do to promote their own work is be proud of the work you've done. And we're very proud of the book, and people have responded really well to it. We've gone through two printings already, which is insane. It's beyond my wildest dreams for the book. Now there's pallets of new copies available for you, dear
Yes.
listener.
And listeners, as Ben has mentioned, there's pallets of new copies. So now this interview is going to go up after Christmas. So if you guys have that Christmas money, go out, buy trade paperbacks of Justice Warriors. So,
I would even buy two and hold on to them
Oh,
because
yes.
much like bread or tulips, these things are valuable, going to be valuable beyond their cover price very shortly. You know,
oh yeah, the demand
investment
high.
Vehicles in and of themselves. These are these are like mortgage-backed securities here.
Yes.
Yeah. 12% APM.
These are Justice Warriors-backed securities. You can buy a bond backed by the pallet of the third printing.
Okay. All right. You guys kind of hinted. You guys are hoping, but will we see more of Swamp Cop and shit?
As long as people keep buying the book, we'll keep making it.
Okay.
I don't know if we're saying anything about more of the stuff, but we're definitely talking to each other about it all the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but the intent is to do a volume a year for mm-hmm. at least a decade. We legitimately have solid ideas for what we mm-hmm. would do. It's a creator-owned series, so it's dependent on sales and how viable that is. So we don't have anything, you know, to officially announce, but we're mm-hmm. probably going to be doing more.
Okay, all right. Because you want to hit the goal of that omnibus, right? Because
I mean,
if I want a boxed omnibus.
Okay.
Yeah. Slip hardcover, slipcase, absolute Justice Warriors edition. But Ben, what was the you came up
introductory
with
Justice Warriors?
Yeah, we want the omnibus to be a giant. Maybe it's like two hardcover volumes called mm-hmm. the Introductory Justice Warriors.
All right. Now I know you guys spoke about hopes of animation series. But the real money is made in merchandising. Will we see Justice Warrior action figures or shit toilet bowl toilet line?
We're going to see lunch boxes.
Yes.
We're going to see weed whackers. We're going to see automotive supplies. We're going to see umbrellas.
We are eventually going to hire a pop artist to actually produce the Prince's music, the mm-hmm. album that he releases in this yes. Volume. Yeah, but seriously though, we do want to get an animated movie or yes. series made. And I think, you know, I'd love toys or some other mm-hmm. stuff, but you could
think it would be a good game. A good yeah. game. A really oh good God. Video game. Like a Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Where you're driving around, you can design your own mutant. Solve crimes in quotation marks.
It would be excellent. I think to get to all that stuff, we need the movie or a, you know, incredibly successful comic, mm-hmm. That could lead to the movie. But I think the movie or a streaming show is high on our agenda. You know, that is actually how Ben originally envisioned yeah. it, because he's an animator.
Mm-hmm.
So we think it works as both. We want to write and draw, you know, we want a 26 season show and, you know, 20 volume comic book run, and we'll be happy.
I want to be bought out by a conglomerate.
Yeah, we want to have Eastman and Laird problems.
Yeah.
10 years from now, Ahoy Comics will be bought out by Disney, Fox, /Sony. And then they're going to look at, hey, wait a minute, what is Justice Warriors? Yeah, you know.
And what if we fire those guys and stop making that? Is what they'll probably say.
Maybe we can subcontract it.
Yeah.
All right, two more questions. Matt, I'm going to start off with you. Have you and your family been to Hawaii?
No, I haven't. I'd love to sometime though, but no, I haven't. And you know, I'd come and I wouldn't even build a gigantic underground bunker like Mark Zuckerberg is
doing. Oh, yes.
I would just simply visit and leave.
Simply visit
I,
on the land.
Yeah, on the surface, land. Above ground, and you know, mm-hmm. leave as I found it. You know, leave the places I found.
Ben, what about you?
Some members of my extended family have a timeshare, but that's my sister-in-law has been, she speaks very highly of it. I would love to go,
mm-hmm.
Above ground, yes. just like Matt.
Ben, I'm going to start off with you, and Matt, you can finish up. Any closing words to our listeners?
Thank you very much for your time.
Just, buy Justice Warriors if it sounds interesting, and thank you.
So, Matt, Ben, just thank you very much for your time. Mahalo.
Oh, yeah.
That's thank you in Hawaii. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to interview the both of you. Thank you very much. I wish you guys continued success with the Justice Warriors trade. I hope you guys get greenlit for another Justice Warriors series. I want to see where literally, like you keep saying, you guys talked about in the previous podcast that how zany it is. But yet there's so many layers to it that I love it. It's great. It
Yes,
is.
that's what we're going for. So it's
You
good to
know.
hear. It's good to hear people say that.
You know.
I try to hold back and not blurt out all the things that we have planned and all the ideas, because they're better if you read them in comic than just hear me blurt them out on the podcast. But me and Ben have, if you like this first one, me and Ben are going to deliver on a couple more for sure.
Ben, do you want to add anything to
Known.
that? All right. Thank you very much, Ben. I also want to thank Hannah Superfan Promotions for setting up this interview and for the advanced reading copy. Now, if you are a new comic book reader that loves biting satire or a lifelong comic book reader, actually, who loves, this dystopian satire, please check out Justice Warriors. What I love about this story is that to me, it makes like, and this is to me, it makes like a generalized commentary about our society. Because it's one of those where it's like, I feel like maybe in about 10 years from now, when people read this, they're gonna go, oh my God, this is reflecting on what's going on during that time period. I love Ben's artwork, the details in
Yes.
it, the tongue person in the riot scene. Oh yes.
Everybody's got a favorite mutant in the riot scene.
And the crazy action sequence that's over the top, and it's awesome. It's amazing. It is, and I love it. It's just great. The important thing I love about this trade, from Ahoy Comics, is that it's made with love and passion, a love for storytelling, and a love for comics, and also to the two main characters. Even though they're not the brightest, but they're likable characters that I can relate to. That's the
Well,
main thing.
they're not the best that humanity has to offer, but who amongst us are?
Yes,
Yeah.
yeah. They're not sending their best.
Now, Ben and Matt, I am being serious when I say this. So listeners, if you have a friend who loves comics, please pick up I'm being serious. Please pick up the Justice Warrior trade. Give it as an after Christmas gift or a birthday present, just to try something a little different to expand, the comic book reading horizons. Like I said, I
Absolutely.
love this. I want to thank Drew, the Coast of Comics for Fun and Profit, for putting this episode together. Drew, thank you very much for all your hard work behind the scenes. And if you are a new listener, please check out new episodes of Comics for Fun and Profit that comes out every Saturday. And I want to thank you, the listeners. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for listening to this episode. Until next time, guys. Aloha.
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 Thank you.
RLCS is Cowabunga Comics, Lake Country, Wisconsin's best pop culture destination for new comics, back issues, gaming, retro video games, vinyl, and figures. Give them a call, 262-569-9999. Check them out online at cowabungacomics.com, or follow them on Twitter at Incredical. They are RLCS, and we utilize their deep discount mail order service to bring Oconomowoc, Wisconsin closer to us. They'll take care of you. Tell them Drew and Kyle sent you. Say hi to Eric and James from us. If you need an LCS, you can't go wrong with Cowabunga Comics.